I'm John. I'm Paul. I'm George.
And I play the drums.
From pod617.com, the Boston Podcast Network, it's Get Back to the Beatles with Chachi Lapret. And Chachi's co-host, Beatles instructor at Suffolk University, David Galan.
Well, hello and welcome to Get Back to the Beatles. I am your host. As the gentleman said, my name is Chachi Lapret. I host New England's Breakfast with the Beatles, long-running radio show, almost 25, 30 years, somewhere in between there. We've been on the air in New England, and this is an extension of the radio show. Our podcast is called Get Back to the Beatles. I am your host, along with Beatles professor, Mr. David Galant, who's been teaching freshmen at Suffolk University the ins and outs of the Beatles for over 15 years. Mr. Galant, it's a pleasure to see you.
Always a pleasure, Chachi.
We have a very special guest today, Mr. Galant, and we also call him a friend. I think the guy is one of the greatest. He's one of the gifts that the Beatles brought to us. And for me, and maybe you too, Mr. Galant, he was a gift of COVID, because it was because of COVID, everyone in lockdown, that we've become friends with Mr. Ivor Davis, award-winning author. He's written for the London Daily Express, The Times London, New York Times. An interesting gentleman, a journalist, eyewitness to some real truly historic events, some really great, some horrendous. We might be able to get to all of it today, but we do want to talk to Mr. Ivor Davis. Good afternoon, good evening, Ivor. It's good to see you.
Good afternoon to you in deepest, darkest Boston. Good to be up with you.
It is the deepest, darkest Boston. We have Ivor here because I have a copy of his updated book. First of all, Mr. Galant, David, I call you David Galant. The first edition of The Beatles and Me on Tour, the tour of 1964, was great. Well, Mr. Davis has updated it to honor 60 years. Ivor, I mean, you probably had no concept back then that 60 years later we'd be talking about your, you know, going on tour with the Beatles in 1964. So with the luxury of everything in the rearview mirror, how has your opinion changed through the years of that experience of traveling with this unknown rock band at the time, when you're hanging out with the likes of Elizabeth Taylor and Cary Grant in Hollywood? Next thing you know, you're on tour with a British band.
Well, it is funny you should say that, because when you are living history, in history, you don't know you are living in history. Things are going by. And I always say my only regret was I never took my iPhone camera with me in 1964 to take all the pictures that everybody else took. But I was there to use my mind as a memory, and it works quite well still today, even though I'm as old as the Beatles, the surviving Beatles, and I do have some fun memories, and it was a remarkable experience in my career, which is, I've had some fun in my career. Anyway, so the Beatles back then were just a sort of a raucous group, part of the British invasion, as you all know. I mean, you guys are experts. Then all of a sudden, they took America by storm, 64, 65, 66. But then, of course, in 66, they got fed up touring. And as expert Beatlemaniacs, or whatever you want to be described, professors, erudite, or whatever, it all ended in 66. But it didn't, did it?
It did not. It did not. David Galant?
Chachi, I will admit, I have not yet obtained the second edition of Ivor's book. And I may, but I love my first edition most of all because Ivor addressed it to me and he signed the copy, having been a co-conspirator of mine when he lectured to my class and had him on Zoom when we were finishing off one of the COVID semesters. And one of my students, actually, her mother grew up in Liverpool. And so she and Ivor were having a nice conversation over Zoom. Her first name was Carmel Ivor. I don't know if you remember her.
Well, it's funny, really. I knew that we had made connections, but until you reminded my jagged memory of that, I didn't know. But I remember doing a terrific, but when you mentioned, you said it was Suffolk, right?
Yes.
And I always thought, when I think of Suffolk, I think of the English seaside towns.
Sure, exactly. Like,
but now I remember, because what I love about those programs with students is they are young and they ask such incredible questions, and they are affected years later by the Beatle music. So,
well,
yeah, miracle, isn't it?
It talk about miracles, Ivor. So there you are covering American popular culture, film culture. You're there in Los Angeles, in Hollywood. And that really, along with New York, were the centers of producing a lot of culture, popular culture that went, and entertainment that went around the world. You being from England probably would still, we're still sort of doubtful that these guys from Liverpool, of all places, not only conquered England, but the whole rest of the world. Well, you were in the middle of this. Did you imagine that it would last longer than 64 or 65, given what you knew of like celebrity culture and Hollywood culture?
Well, David, how things, I mean, stars come along, they explode, and then you don't hear much of them except in old movies. And even with rock stars, I mean, how many groups? I mean, the Stones are still going strong, sort of. And the Beatles are still going strong, mainly thanks to Paul's magnificent marketing techniques. I mean, he really is the genius behind the resurrection, if there ever was a death, of the Beatles. And so I haven't answered your question, but no, Brian Epstein used to say, we all scoffed. He said the Beatles will be remembered as big as Beethoven. We said, what a load of old toffee that is. What a load of rubbish that is. And the answer is he was right. Brian was right. And it was sad that he never lived to see the continued success, because they were his boys and he would have worked for them for nothing, or almost, even though he was a businessman. And it was a different world, a different attitude, and nobody ever imagined that we would be talking about them as we are 60 years later.
Brian was so prescient about it, because if you recall, and we all remember where he was bragging a little bit or advancing his cause in front of Ed Sullivan to say that they will be bigger than Elvis. And then he upped the ante after a while to say they'll be remembered like Beethoven. He went from Elvis to Beethoven in about a year. That's really quite amazing.
It is. And we all thought, as I said, it was a bunch of old rubbish. And Brian was just, you know, talking out of his wear.
Yes.
And here we are. I think it was Chachi got me together with a 14-year-old podcaster in Boston.
Yes.
Who knew more about the Beatles than I did. I forget his name now. But you've got these young kids who sing. A young boy came up to me at the gym and he was about 14 and said, you travel with the Beatles. I love the Beatles. He was 14. So how do you explain that? I'm going to throw it back at you, David. How do you explain the students' passion? I mean, I do UCLA. I did some other universities, UC Santa Barbara. I mean, what is it? What appeals to them? I'm sorry to throw the question back at you guys. What is it appeals to the younger generation about the Beatles now?
Well, I think that with a little bit of thought, they can see sort of the roots of any other type of passions they have about culture, film, graphics, fashion, and music. And then they realize some of the roots of that grew up with mass media are these guys. And at the heart of it, as most people would say, it's the music that keeps them going and keeps them interested, and they keep rediscovering things. I mean, let alone if they grew up and their parents had the CD of all the number one hits playing in the minivan driving them to soccer practice.
Yeah.
And then I open the door for them to learn about all the deep cuts and everything, and it keeps going from there. And then not just if they inherited it from an older generation, then they start to spread the news laterally, sideways, right? And then you get even a broader base. But I still have trouble explaining to them, because I didn't live through it myself, just that wild, unexpected phenomenon to have come from that port city, where much in England it would have been scoffed at. And that sort of leap, if you will, to the national consciousness and then world consciousness is such an astounding leap.
Yes, and to take that a step further, the leap is astounding, because prestigious universities like yours and all over the country actually have dedicated classes to the Beatles. I mean, they don't have dedicated classes to the Rolling Stones or to the Dane Clark Five. I don't think so, unless you're going to correct me on that.
No.
So it is astounding, as we sit here 60 years after they hit America, to realize that.
And, you know, you're right, Ivor. And through the years of doing this program, meeting listeners and fans, I've met many parents and grandparents who take just huge delight that there's something in common they can talk to their kids or grandkids about, that would be the Beatles, because there's so much not in common nowadays with parents and their children. So they find it, man, we can share the Beatles with our kids and our grandkids, and they get great joy out of it.
Yes, and again, going back to the magic of Paul McCartney, who is, we know, the driving force, with all due respect to Ringo, although Ringo goes on tour, doesn't he, with his all-star band, but he knows his limitations. He doesn't fill a stadium and be on stage for 3 hours and 15 minutes nonstop. I don't know if any of you, both of you seen Paul's latest show, the whole spectacular?
Yeah, traveling in Australia. And that's one of the parts of your book that I really enjoy at the end, where you reconnect with them years later. You reconnected with John during his lost weekend. You reconnected backstage with Paul. And when you did reconnect with Paul and John, I mean, do they have these real recollections of traveling with you in 64? Does that connection come back?
I mean, I think it certainly did with John, because it wasn't, when I saw John, I forget the year, he was living for his lost weekend in LA, and he remembered me. Paul, when I saw him at San Diego at the stadium, he's charming. I went with Henry Diltz, who was a great photographer.
Yes.
And Henry and I stood backstage before the show, would you believe, talking to Paul about the old days. And I always remember, Paul, I said to Paul, in the old days, you used to travel in a beat-up old station wagon with two schleppers, or two, Mal and Neil, carrying everything. And now, when you travel to overseas, you must travel in a better car than the old beat-up station wagon. He said, yeah, we take a jumbo jet. Have 120 people on the team, for the team. And he does a great show. I mean, you said you've seen it.
Yes.
It's magnificent. It's razzle-dazzle. Paul, like all of us, has got older. His voice is not quite as powerful as it was, but he gets a little help from his friends, including the backup groups and stuff like that. So. Well, it's still a great performance.
We're going to take a minute right now to tell you about another podcast that you should definitely check out. It's called Past Tens, a top 10 time machine.
That's right, Chachi. Tens, as in T-E-N-S. Your host, David Yaz, and the Chartmeister, Michael Milwolf, travel back in time to revisit the top 10 hits on the Billboard charts on a given day in the past. Sometimes the songs hold up nicely, other times they make you cringe, and that's when comedy and chaos ensue on Past Tense.
You know, David, I think the best episode was when they went back to 1964, because the list was packed with Beatles songs, and also because those bozos, Milt and Dave, respectively, had the good sense to have us on that episode to school them on all things Beatles.
I agree, Chachi. That was a fantastic episode, probably their best. But also check out the episode where I filled in for Milt. It spared the audience the usual allotment of milk fart jokes. You'll have to listen to it to what other types of bodily function jokes are put in.
I had no idea that you were a guest host. I feel offended and betrayed, but I have to admit, for a couple of knuckleheads, these guys put on a fantastic show. It's Past Tens, a top 10 time machine. Find it anywhere you get your podcasts, or visit timemachinepod.com. That's timemachinepod.com.
From pod617.com, the Boston Podcast Network, you're listening to Get Back to the Beatles with Chachi Lapret.
Ivo, you just mentioned Mal Evans, and there's been some attention given to Mal with a new book that was out recently about the life of Mal Evans. Tell us about Mal, what you thought of him, your interactions.
I will say this, that Mal Evans was a lovable lug, okay? I mean, I don't mean him in a detrimental way. And I loved reading Kim Womack's book about him, because it gave some added shades of Mal. Unfortunately, what sours the whole picture is the terrible way in which Mal Evans died in L.A., being shot by LAPD in a domestic squabble. And that was a squalid end to a life of a guy who started off as a bodyguard, he worked a laborer, if you like, and then he joined the Beatles and became one of their trusted companions. I mean, he was the keeper of the Beatle rooms. I think Ken Womack suggests, which is probably true, believe it or not, that he was their official pimp. and I don't want to get into too down and dirty, but Mal was the keeper of the gates to heaven for some of the girls. I don't know, I'm being a bit too clever here, but he was the one that let them come in and meet the Beatles, and they trusted him, and he was, I mean, he wanted to be a songwriter. I think he helped them with some of the song, but he was really a good soul, and who found himself in Beatle heaven, enjoying the delicacies of Beatle heaven as well.
Yeah, I wish he lived on to be recognized for the great man that he was. He wasn't paid a lot. He worked 24 hours a day at the expense of his relationship with his wife and kids. So it was sad how he passed on us. But, you know, yes, the book is fantastic. And since you're in Los Angeles, here we are last week or so, the Oscars. Sean wins an Oscar.
Oh, yes. And that was amazing, wasn't it, for the animated film? I mean, everything you see is, and the word tainted is the wrong word, touched, that's better, touched by a Beatle connection. The Oscars in the year 2024, and there is young Mr. Lennon going up, helping himself to a trophy. So you can't write that script.
Yeah, and the entire audience saying happy birthday to Yoko, recognizing Yoko. Hopefully she saw it. Yeah. I'm sure she did, but what a moment, right? All these years later, it just never ends, which is great for us. David Gallant.
I mean, the tentacles. Even the tentacles are us three. We are an additional link to the whole Beatle empire. Mm-hmm. And when you say empire, it sounds a bit fastidious or whatever. But you know what I mean. We would not be talking at this very hour without the Beatles.
You mentioned empire, right? So I'll go back to Edward Gibbon. And so there really hasn't been a decline and fall of the Beatles empire, has
That's
there?
That's right. Very good. That's I like that.
A Pax Beatlemania, right?
Yes.
In a lot of ways.
I love that. That's terrific. The decline and fall of the empire, except for the Beatles. Because the decline and fall of the British empire has come about, but somehow the Beatles have superseded that, and they're not touched by, are they?
The tentacles wrapping around, as Chachi mentions, the Oscars. Previous to that, we also had the Grammys, where the Beatles won a Grammy for Video of the Year with the animation for I'm Only Sleeping, which happened to be a short film that my students, if they wanted to, could have chosen as an option for one of their final exam pieces, was to talk about that animation, actually. And so it was nice then when the Grammys came, I contacted them again because I had them in the fall saying, see, all of you Taylor Swift fans, this is still happening for the Beatles.
Well, I mean, the Beatles, you've got to, I mean, not only you talk about A Hard Day's Night, you talk about 8 Days a Week, Ron Howard's documentary, you talk about Yellow Submarine. That was kind of ahead of its time, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. So they were able to be so versatile in everything they touched. I mean, the Magical Mystery Tour, if you remember it, I'm sure you do because you guys are experts, wasn't quite as good as we thought it would be because it was done without any script. It was sort of on the road and let's do what we want to do. And that doesn't often work with a movie.
Yeah, what? the trick of A Hard Day's Night that Richard Lester wanted to make it look like it was all handheld and avant-garde and French New Wave, but it actually had a very detailed, carefully written out script all the same. But you're right, Ira, because anyone who was anyone in the fields of art, fashion, photography, film, music, wanted to work with the Beatles, right? I mean, Leonard Bernstein had to sort of give himself hip credentials by talking about how much he loved the Beatles when he would do his shows with young people and talk about their work. And the same with Warhol wanting to do a painting of them. And it just went on and on and on like that, that they helped you build your own credentials to stay relevant would be to work with them.
And who could forget Liberace wanted to meet them because they played piano so well, right, Ivor?
Exactly. That was in Vegas. But, you know, the Beatles were very fussy about who they met. At least Brian was, because Brian realized then, I mean, there's a story with Jane Mansfield, was the little known story where Jane, who was the publicity hound of all publicity hounds, sex symbol that was like an ersatz Marilyn Monroe, for those of you out there who know who Marilyn Monroe is, Jane Mansfield managed to get together with the Beatles, minus Paul, in a disastrous night at the Whiskey A Go-Go. And we were sitting there watching Jane trying to canoodle with John, and John canoodling with Jane, and George getting PO'd at the photographers who were shooting, and finally ended up in a disaster. They went to see a guy called Johnny Rivers play at Whiskey Go-Go.
Sure.
You guys may be too young for Johnny Rivers.
No. I love Johnny Rivers.
Secret Agent Man?
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
Come on. That's a great track.
It was.
So there it is. I forget you guys are historians. So when I toss something out, if I'm talking to the students, you know this, David, when you're talking to students, you have to explain. If you mention Cary Grant or Charlie Chaplin, you have to explain who's Cary Grant and Charlie Chaplin and people, and Paul Newman. Paul Newman does more than make salad dressing, doesn't he?
Well, we get to do that when we take a tour through the Sgt. Pepper album cover. And my students have written essays on everyone from Fred Astaire to Lenny Bruce to Johnny Weissmuller. Oh, absolutely. But I think Chachi and I, you've also, I think, been on tour with him. Chachi and I, in talking to Leslie Cavendish, tells a great story about, I think, being in Sassoon's hair salon, but taking an elevator sandwiched between Jane Mansfield and Deanna Doors. Talk about your fantasies, right?
Yeah, oh, God.
You know, I would survive that. I don't know.
Was there any room?
You know, Ivor, you just ruled the world in Los Angeles back when celebrities were real celebrities. Stars were stars.
And blondes were all pneumatic.
Did you meet Marilyn Monroe?
No, I never met Marilyn Monroe, but I did meet Jane Mansfield, and I did meet Elizabeth Taylor. But Elizabeth Taylor and some of these great actresses, and when I tell my kids I met Charlie Chaplin, they think I must be talking out of my ears, because Charlie Chaplin has been gone a long time, another genius. And talk about geniuses. Sorry, I'm freewheeling a bit here. Charlie Chaplin was brilliant, a genius. John Lennon was brilliant, a genius, and I love Robin Williams, another genius who died too soon. So when I don't know how we got onto this, but yeah, I mean, the kids that you talk to are in your class, they know a lot of people, but they obviously studied some of these names that if I would toss out to today's listenership, would wonder who the hell are they?
Well, you have such a history, Ivor. You are a gift. You really are. I just love you. You're such a great man. You're so kind. You have a sharp memory. Now, 60 years ago, you were on tour with the Beatles right around now, I suggest. And
yes, exactly. I mean, because the Beatles had just done Ed Sullivan.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you brought me back to my book, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a little bit of campaigning in some of the cities where the Beatles made their mark in 1964. And believe me, they made their mark in every city.
They sure did. The book is called The Beatles and Me on Tour, the 60th Anniversary Edition by the great Ivor Davis. And we haven't even touched the surface here. This man has so much history, not just in the Beatles, but with Charles Manson, Robert Kennedy. I mean, you're just a story gentleman. And we love this guy, right, Mr. Gallant?
We absolutely do, Chachi. And I know that we're going to have Ivor back at least come September to celebrate 60 years since the Beatles came to Boston.
That's right.
Boston. First concert
in September of 64, yes.
And
let's talk about Boston, yeah.
And Ivor, we understand that was a whirlwind. You didn't even know sometimes what city you were in. It was that crazy.
Well, the Beatles didn't know what city they were in. But we arrived in Toronto, I remember, and we were there for 3 minutes at the press conference at the airport. Somebody said, well, what do you think of the Toronto women, John? And John said, oh, we just arrived. Lovely. I do a bad Liverpool accent.
Well, thank you for coming on Get Back to the Beatles. And I will recommend to everyone out there, whether you bought the first book or not, you need to get the follow-up, The Beatles and Me on Tour, the 60th Anniversary Edition by Ivor Davis. Ivor, we wish you well. We have to wrap up a little bit early today, but thank you for joining us, and thanks for everything you do to keep the Beatles alive. And we just think you're the greatest, Ivor.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for doing everything you do to keep the Beatles alive, particularly with our younger generation, David.
That's right, Mr. Gallant. Thank you, Ivor. Thank you, David Gallant. You've been listening to Get Back to the Beatles, presented and produced by the Boston Podcast Network. David Yaz, you can fulfill your dreams to have your own podcast, because they produce ours here. and reach out to David Yaz at the Boston Podcast Network. On behalf of David Gallant, our special guest today, Ivor Davis, love one another, as George Harrison said. See you next time. Bye-bye. Get back, JoJo.
Make sure to check for the latest episode of Get Back to the Beatles with Chachi Lapret at pod617.com, the Boston Podcast Network.